Alright guys, welcome to the show. This is Into the Apocalypse. I am Adam, your humble host, and I am here with Shut X. What's going on, dude?
Oh, you know, living the dream. I'm at the tail end of my vacation.
Yeah.
I had to go back to work one day and it meant nothing to me.
Yeah. Well, it was great to have you here. It was fun. I wish you could have stayed longer.
Yeah, thank you so much for your hospitality. You both were just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, next time you come, I'll give you a something to sleep on that doesn't deflate in the middle of the night.
I was so worried I was waking you guys up with turning that little motor on in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was no big deal.
Yeah, I've spent many a night in like a tent on a campground being like, man, should I plug the inflator back in or should I just tough this out for the next 3 hours? But
yeah,
the best answer is always inflate it. But yeah, it was cool to have you here. We got to do a live in studio show. I don't think the sound sounded too bad. So
okay,
it was cool.
Yeah, that was great. Ghost was a great guest too.
Yeah, it was fun. And we got another Pennsylvania guy tonight. So
sweet.
Pennsylvania heavy lately. But guys, we are a value for value production. So anything that you feel like you can give back to the show, a level of donation, time, talent, treasure that matches what you're getting out of the show. So, you know, monetary donations have been tight lately. I understand that things are not great out there and everybody tightens up a little bit around the holiday season. So if you guys can't do anything like that, we could use some more 5-star reviews. We haven't got any of those in a long time. Got a 1-star review a little while ago. I think it's from someone that I kicked out of the Telegram chat. And you know, other than that, everything's going good. Our numbers are down, but I think probably everybody's numbers are not as good as they used to be because the market is saturated and, you know, getting more and more saturated every day. So, you know, I guarantee you there's some people that have really keyed into the success, what would you call it? Just found out what makes it so your listeners don't plateau or go down. I'm still looking for it. I'm going to continue tweaking the show, and that's probably doing it. And then I also know that inconsistent releasing of shows has also probably hurt us a little bit. But we're going to keep at it and trying to do our best. But yeah, I'm excited for today. I think our last few shows have been good. I need to work on my interviewing skills and prepare a little bit better. But yeah, did you guys get in any snow up there today?
Snowing as we speak.
Like, is it sticking and
starting to?
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably started like around noon, you know, just like a few flecks here and there. But then pretty soon it was actually flakes. And by the time I left to pick up the boy from Learning Center, you know, it was starting to stick, but it would take a long time. Like it needs to do this all night to be, you know, really snow on the ground. Right now it's just barely white.
Yeah, it snowed for us this morning, early this morning till about 8:30, 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And it was cold enough to stick a little bit when it first started, but it warmed up.
And, did you warm up? Yeah, so we've stayed. I saw it at 31 at one point today.
Okay.
We've stayed cold. So I knew if it comes, it's going to stick whatever amount it is. So,
yeah, I think you guys are generally colder than us during the wintertime because you're farther towards the North Pole.
Yes, that must be it.
But yeah, other than that, what else?
I think
that
you guys get a bigger flex. I'm just kind of guessing and looking at it. Excuse me. But I think you guys get a bigger flex in your temperatures than we do. Like you might have a colder night, but then that's followed by a warmer day,
right?
Like where we might stay just varying a few degrees from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Got it. Yeah. It's it's a strange climate here, but yeah, everything else is good. Farm's good. House is dry. So that's all that really matters, you know. Did we talk about, did you have a good Thanksgiving? Did we already talk about that?
Yeah, we talked about that at the beginning of the last one. I will tell you though, I had a good drive home, much
Yeah.
better than my drive up. I took 405 and just kind of skipped Seattle. It's just kind of like a loop that goes through Bellevue and Redmond, like all those techie areas.
Yeah.
I think those get really horrible on weekdays, but you know, it was a weekend, so people aren't working. So it's just like travel, people traveling, not people commuting to work. But and you might be familiar with this because you spent more time in bigger cities than me, but that highway had it didn't have an HOV lane
Yeah.
like I remember it having. Instead, it has express toll lanes.
Got it.
You ever seen those?
Yeah, they don't have that in the Bay Area. They have the fast track lane, so you go through without paying toll, and it just like takes a picture of your license plate and it's hooked up to your bank account.
Yeah, that's what this seemed to be, because like every I don't know 3 to 5 miles there was a thing hanging over that had a whole bunch of they looked like cell panels or something, but with blue lights that would flash as a car would come in. They're pointing both towards the car and behind the car,
Yeah.
and each one had a little satellite dish sticking off of that. And there's warnings everywhere saying, if you have the app, drive in this lane. If you're paying by mail, drive in this lane. Toll added if you're paying by mail. And also signs everywhere saying $536 fine for violation. And I'm just like, holy crap, that's crazy. It's crazy to think that I feel like it's just the start of them taking pictures of our cars, violating things, and sending us tickets in the mail, essentially.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, they've
I
been
don't.
doing that for a long time, man. They have these cars. I forget what they call it. I've heard, James Corbett talk about it before. They have these cars. I haven't heard anything from him in a long time. And it's just got like one of those like 360 degree cameras on it, and it just goes and it like takes a it just records everyone's license plate that it drives past and downloads all the data for it. My
Yeah.
ex-girlfriend in Marin County got her car towed because of one of those for like
Yeah.
outstanding parking tickets or something.
No shit. Like she was parked, it drove
She was
by
parked
on a
at the
city
house.
street.
Yeah, it like was like, oh, here's the car. They are over the limit to where we were going to tow them. And she like came out in the morning, it was gone.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about all that.
I feel terrible about it.
Like, well, but there's a part of me in the past that would say, you know, I think, and this wasn't ever popular with like libertarians or anyone I was around, but I would say a red light camera isn't as bad as it sounds because at least it's like photographic proof that you did or you did not break the law, as opposed to leaving it in the hands of a police officer who is using his judgment to decide whether or not you broke the law. And there's no real record of what happened. It's just your word against his that you ran a red light or were speeding or you know, whatever else.
Yeah.
But so I was kind of had this like really unpopular belief that I wasn't too vocal about it, but it was kind of like I think there might be something good to that idea. But then as I'm looking at all those cameras taking pictures of all those cars, and I'm driving in the lane right next to it, and I'm thinking like, man, if I was just over that far, I could be getting billed for this drive that I'm taking. I don't know. It just
Yeah.
seems like all of this stuff, and it always was. I wasn't right back then, and but it's just stepping us closer and closer to a complete and total surveillance state.
Multnomah County, which is Portland, gives tickets from a van with a camera on it. Nope, not manned.
Yeah, fuck that
I got a
shit.
full I got I was driving to church, and there's this little town right before you get to Portland. I think it's actually called, part of Portland called Linton. They have like a feed store there and stuff, and it slows down to 35. Now I was coming out of there, and they got me for like 65 and a 35. And it was like $400
And it just comes to you. Like you never
just from
talk to
the
anybody. It just.
I saw the flash and it ruined my day. And I was like, that's coming. 2 weeks later it came. They'll let you plead no contest and they take like $150 off of it. But
Jesus.
yeah, they have them all over the place, and they're not like the private They would always, people would always say, like, oh, if you get a red light camera ticket, like it's coming from a private company, there's nothing you can do if you don't pay it. And that's true. I've done that before in the Bay Area. But here it's like it's the Oregon or Multnomah County
The
Department
state,
of
the county,
Transportation or whatever, you know. But it
something on the
sucks.
official level.
They don't, they do that as soon as you cross from my county, Columbia County, into Multnomah County, into Portland. As soon as you do it, they put one there.
So, do we still have? I don't know. It seems like this type of technology being out, obviously, the farther away from, well, I don't know if it's obvious, but it seems like the farther away from a city you get, the less you're going to have that type of technology out there. But what about people with warrants or unpaid parking tickets? It just seems like there's like no place to hide.
Yeah, they're gonna be like drones doing the same thing or something, you
Yeah,
know?
just at any point in time, they go, oh, we need to find this person. They're on the lam. They're out driving. Let's check the data. Oh, there they are. There they
Yeah.
are. Like they can just see your path and come up and catch up with you. And here we are
What's
with
up,
Jack
guys?
Allen.
Jack Allen,
Yo.
what's going on, dude?
Not much, dude. What's going on with you?
Oh, we're happy to have you, man. How is
Awesome.
it over there in the land of John Fetterman?
Even better, dude. It's like Wizard of Oz here. What's like now? I can't think of the
John
Wizard of Oz
Fetterman,
part.
did they ever remedy the fact that you guys elected a dead guy too?
No, I think they're working on that. One thing at a time, dude. All right, come on. One
What
thing
are they
at a
doing? Are they
time.
giving it to like his stepson or is
Right,
like the
we're
county
going back to a
comptroller now or
monarchy.
something? Yeah. Happy to have you, man. What's going on over there?
Not much, dude. Yeah, it's pretty getting a little colder, getting a little colder, but working with my dog outside. So
Cool.
yeah, so if
Just
I
a
if
pop,
I
right?
yeah, he's like I think like 16 weeks or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
That
What
guy
kind of
looks.
a dog?
It's a English cream golden retriever. Yeah.
I bet that's fun.
Yeah, it's sometimes. Just now he was barking for 20 minutes to when we put him in the crate. But
How's married life treating you? I haven't spoken to you
hey,
since you got married.
it's great, dude. Yeah, and we lived together and stuff before, but it's nice saying my wife. I enjoy that, saying it before I would say it, but it wasn't real yet, So that's nice.
Oh,
How are
that's
things with
great.
you guys?
Oh, they're
Things are
good up
good here,
here.
man. Yeah, we were talking about the weather like we do every show. It's getting cold here. It's snowing on Chud right now, and it snowed on me this morning. So,
That's hilarious, dude. You two
but
farmers.
yeah,
Weather's
hey,
important.
I got a question for you, man. I've been a little bit obsessed, not obsessed, but really interested in Western Pennsylvania for a long time. Are
Okay.
you familiar with
Yeah,
what
my
goes on
family's
there?
from Pittsburgh.
Okay. How about like the more like rural, maybe not rural, but like the heavy industrial coal areas and stuff like that. I watched this movie called Out of the Furnace. Have you ever seen it?
No.
With Batman, with Christian Bale.
Oh.
And it's got the green chick from Guardians of the Galaxy in it.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It's a really good movie. You should watch it. I think
All right.
it's on Amazon Prime, Out of the Furnace.
All right, I'll
And
check
it's
that out.
just it's like the same, setup for all the movies that take place there, like Deer Hunter. So like Deer Hunter, Out of the Furnace. What else we got? We've got All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise. You ever seen that one?
No.
Oh, that's a good movie, man. It's one of Tom Cruise's first movies ever, where he plays like a high school football player in
Okay.
Western. But and it's got Craig T. Nelson as the coach in it.
Okay.
Oh, the coach is the coach.
Yeah. But what is it true? Like all just the stereotypes of that area, like the architecture and like the streets and the houses and the hills there, it seems really, really like an interesting place to me. And it's the
I lived in Pittsburgh for like 5 years, and so my family, but I love everything about like the city's great, like way better than Philadelphia. And then the rural areas, they're a little depressing because there's not much industry there.
Yeah, it's rust,
But like,
but at one point it was probably a lot of,
oh yeah.
it was probably a prospering
Oh,
working class
that's like where
area,
my dad grew up, dude. His dad worked in one of the mills, and
like what you do, yeah, and famous for like pumping out really good quarterbacks, like Dan Marino, and
Yes, my uncle actually photographed Dan Marino's wedding.
yeah, Right on. Yeah, Dan Marino, Joe Montana's from there, a whole bunch. Yeah, but yeah, I'd like to.
Michael Keaton, he's from Pittsburgh.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Batman.
Yeah, more Batman.
Synchro. But yeah, I just.
Are you thinking about like moving there?
No, I would just like to visit somewhere, and it's kind of like a weird geographical area to me. Like we don't know anything like about the East Coast. So, but it's kind of like the convergence of the East Coast with the Midwest.
Because yes, and, the gateway to the Midwest. I think that's what they called Pittsburgh.
And it's got Appalachia there to the. Is it considered in Appalachia?
I don't know about that, but I'm sure it's right on the border.
Because isn't there a spot where it's like West Virginia?
Yeah, borders right there.
Ohio. And then like New Jersey's out in there somewhere too, right?
More east, but across the state, yeah.
And then there's like real rural backwater parts of New Jersey too in the southern part, right?
Yeah, a lot of like, well, probably more central because southern you're like by Philly,
okay,
and the beaches. But Pittsburgh, dude, you like you look like, and Chud too. You guys look like you guys would live in Pittsburgh. Like that's it's like you're like, I don't know if you have tattoos, Chud, but like your looks, they're like. That's like with the city of Pittsburgh. It's like I said, it's so much better than Philly, like just so much better.
Yeah.
Smaller, but.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, if it gets closer, you let me know, dude. I can give you more ideas or whatever.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
But today we have you on not to talk about Pennsylvania, John Fetterman, Joe Biden, you know, any of those guys, but to talk about Templars, Pirates, early America, get into some. We haven't done any secret society stuff in forever. So, yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But you just put out a 3-part series on Templar pirates. And if you could give us a quick, you know, 1-episode overview of all that, we'd really appreciate it.
Yeah. And you before, guys- before you start, I just got to say, I was enamored for all 3 episodes.
Oh, dude.
I listened to the first 2 and then I took a week off from listening to any podcasts and it drove me crazy because I knew that came out and I was going, oh, I should. No. I'm just trying to go a couple more days. And finally yesterday I was like, oh, all right. I can finally do because you talked up the 3rd one. Yes. So much with our friend Columbo.
Yes, dude, that was so nice. Wow. Thank you, dude. That was so nice too. But and you guys jump in when, because I was like, before this, I feel like I was cramming for a test because I only go by my notes. And but if you have anything, please just jump in and you'll probably help me remember something.
Yeah, that's great. We'll just talk about it because I love every subject that you hit on during those 3 are all awesome, things that dude. I just love. I love Francis Drake and there's even people up here in the Northwest who believe that Francis Drake was out up in the bays around here and hiding things and stuff like that. So
where Deborah lives, there's one of the big main streets was Sir Francis Drake Boulevard, and I think recently made him rename it.
This like whole story, it kind of goes along with like this like a Tartarian-esque thing, because it like goes over at that the knowledge. What knowledge do our ancestors actually have, and what do we admit that, or what does history tell us they have? And this whole story, like, I think we can all kind of agree, like Columbus, that's, you know, sailing the ocean blue in 1492 is a total simplification, if not an outright lie.
It's fake and gay. I think that's the phrase we prefer around here.
I agree, dude. I agree. But they have all these, like, these maps, like I'm sure you've done the show, like how California is an island, or you've talked about that with the Tartarian maps.
And yeah, we did that with Golden Gate Star Fort Command.
Yeah, right. And it's the same kind of thing that these, like our ancient ancestors did much more than what we're told. And they had these maps and they've been passed around to secret societies, mainly the Templars. I mean, the story is, and I've loved Templars. I've read so much Templar stuff, but the way that I understood that this author says that the Columbus and all these people got the maps was that the Phoenicians, they were the seafaring people, great sailors, Egypt used them. And to build Temple of Solomon, they hired the Phoenicians, Hiram of Biff and King Hiram of Tyre. And so there are these great seafaring people, they're trading far and wide, and they have they build Solomon's temple, and they have to leave suddenly, and they leave a lot of their stuff underneath, hidden in Solomon's temple. Some of this being treasure, some of this being maps, knowledge, whatever. And these maps remain hidden until the Christians go into Jerusalem in 1095 to start the first crusade. And once they win, a lot of the knights, they're too poor to go back. So this becomes the ones that stay behind, the poor knights of the temple. Knights
Templar.
Yeah. And because they go ahead.
Is the Solomon's temple in Jerusalem?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like known. Is it still there?
It's just the I think that one wall is part of the original temple, but it's been, I think that like goes into, I don't, you guys probably like how they want to rebuild the temple. That's the end of times. Do you know that theory?
Rebuilding the Solomon's temple.
It's like
a sign of the end of times.
Yeah. Like the third temple once built, that's like the beginning of whether the Antichrist comes or the Messiah comes. I don't know. I'm butchering this. Okay. This is like an Adam Green, no more news kind of area, but
yeah.
Yeah.
That's general idea of it.
Yeah. I've heard some things like that.
Are they like planning on building like some one world religion, world church there or something?
Yeah. And it's also like, I don't, you know, we're getting into, I'm going to territory I don't know, but like the third temple, they need to bring all the Jewish people back to Israel, rebuild the third temple. And that's supposedly going to force God's hand into presenting the Antichrist or their Messiah if it doesn't happen within a certain time, something like that. I don't know. If someone's listening, they're probably like, that's totally wrong. So, but it's something give or take.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so the Templar, the Crusades happened. The only successful crusade, might I add, the other ones we lost pretty much. But the Templars, they get a room right next to the new king, Geoffrey de Bouillon, something like that. Bouillon's the last name, or Baldwin. And anyway, they stay in the temple, and like anyone does when you're staying in a hotel or maybe a friend's house, they're asleep. You dig around a little bit. You're looking in drawers.
I was like, just in Adams. I know all about this.
Do you have any porn magazines? You know, all these kind of things. The Templars start doing that, and they hit the treasure trove of Phoenician documents that consist of these ancient maps. And that's like kind of how the story begins. And that's, you know, turn of the century, 1100s. So I can keep going, but I know
And that's significant time-wise because 1054 is also the Great Schism.
Oh yeah. I've seen, there's a book. I think I have the book.
The Schism is, you know, prior to that, all Christianity is Orthodox Christianity. 1054, and they're all under different regions. So 1054, Rome breaks off, and that's when they instill the Pope, and it becomes, that's when Catholicism starts to evolve.
Yeah, I think that's
important. Roman Catholicism.
I think that's important to this story. I didn't think about that listening to Jack's episodes.
It's definitely,
But that's absolutely part of all of this, I'm sure.
So they didn't have a Pope before 1054? Or they did?
No
Pope. Wow, dude.
And I don't know
why looked into that, but I've seen, I literally have a book. I think it's called The Great Schism.
I don't know how long after 1054 it took, if they did it immediately or if it took a minute, but yeah. But was it, were the Crusades all like under the Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah. Okay. They had to like hype everybody up to, you know, all the kings and things like that. And that, so that I would like your guys's takes on the, so the Templars, like I said, I've loved them, like reading about them forever. And in the beginning, like the first year, 2 years of reading Templar stuff, I was like, okay, Catholic Church bad. These guys, they got too wealthy. They got too powerful. The King Philip wanted the riches of the Templars. So that's why they went out and got them. And then I read Secret Societies, The Subversive Movements by Helen Nesta Webster. And she breaks it down in a way that I never thought of. So what are your guys' like immediate belief about the Templars? Good guys or bad guys?
I think they're bad guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Took me a while to get there. You know, I didn't learn that from watching Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, Chud said, he was just here. I showed him my record collection. So one of my favorite bands of all time is the Templars. So I got I got this. This is a whole stack of them. Whole stack of records by this band. I got
to look them up.
Yeah.
Templars. I wonder if there's symbolism in any of their songs.
They don't get into all the stuff that we're talking about. They just talk about they're more interested, I think, just in the medieval imagery of the whole thing, you know.
Visually it's packed, the imagery on there is amazing.
That's
awesome.
So
there's this here's a cool one right here.
Oh, that is a cool one, dude. Yeah. Damn.
There's Chud knows about it. There's these really badly done old Spanish horror movies. It's there's six of them, I think, called Tombs of the Blind Dead. And so they use all the imagery from that, but that is about some Templar knights coming back from the dead to
zombie people. Templars.
Yeah, zombie Templar knights. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Tombs of the Blind Dead. Yeah, check it out.
And there's tons of them.
So yeah, I was always really interested in that before I was down any conspiracy rabbit holes. You know, I've got a belt buckle of the guys riding two up on a horse.
Dude, hilarious. My God.
And I never, people would make fun of it, but yeah, I never put two and two together and been they were kissing each other's BHs.
Right.
You know, maybe there is something more to that than, you know.
Yes.
I do have to say it was acceptable for men to ride two up on motorcycles or even a Vespa scooter if you're a European until pretty recently. So
I didn't know that. No, that's
I would not be caught dead doing it, you know, but
but it was okay. That's interesting.
But it wasn't necessarily immediately that you were gay if you were doing that.
Yeah.
They gave some open mind.
I thought it was it's really interesting how it gets into, and then all the stuff with Friday the 13th and then all the modern day stuff with Knights of Malta. And even, do you remember when in Vallejo, California, there was a big scandal, all these cops, it's kind of a depressed Navy town. That's kind of, it's got a lot of crimes where E-40's from.
Oh, okay.
And Mac Dre. But all these cops were when they would kill somebody there, they would bend one of the points on their badge down. And it was this cool club that you would be in. And it had something to do with some order of the Templar Knights that they were some secret society that they were all part of. And then there's stuff in San Francisco with Kamala Harris and the Knights Templar and stuff like that. So,
I never heard that.
Oh man. I haven't thought about that for a little while, since she was running for president before she became the vice presidential candidate.
Yeah. When she got smoked by Tulsi Gabbard.
She is a top dog in the Fraternal Order of the Templar Police.
Yeah. So
ton. This was a really fucked up rabbit hole, and it's all hard to find now. I'd have to go through some old research and probably have to go to Wayback Machine to find any of it. Dude. But yeah, there are all kinds of Mason related cop incidences where the cops probably should have been removed, but she would be directly involved and everything would go away. It was it was at the time. At the time, you know, this is quite a while ago now. We've, you know, this is pre-pandemic.
right.
But it was holy shit. I was really sounding the horn that look, she is a Mason or a Templar or something. I mean, you just have to look at this for 10 minutes and your mind will be blown.
Well, so that I was the opposite of you guys. When I saw it, I thought the Templars were just unfairly persecuted by the church. And then I knew that they were the first European usury banking. And I would try to say, I'd try to justify that in my mind somehow and still say they were the good guys. They were trying to bring down the Catholic Church. But after reading that one book, she just breaks down how this, there's no way. These guys, everyone says, they were tortured by the Catholic Church. That's why they admitted all these heresies and things like that, which is true. And in France, they were absolutely tortured, but they were, there's trials when it happened all over Europe. And a lot of these countries, Britain, I forget which king it was. He loved the Templars so much. He refused to he didn't even want to arrest them, but he did eventually, but he refused to torture them. They had the same, answer as the ones that were being tortured. Same with the ones. Yeah. I can't think of the word right now, but like
testimony. the same confessions.
Yeah. They had the same confessions.
So they had like a stock confession. They're like, when you're getting tortured, this is what you say.
Well, no, I think more in the lines that if you were, the point was like, so if the confessions from the torture were fake, like why were they so similar to the ones that were obtained without torture? And also like the thing, because they have this, because the Catholic Church would write everything down, whether it's from that time, I guess we could debate, but a lot of these, none of them had like insane things. Like they would all, a lot of the guys would talk about spitting on the cross, worshiping this like hairy head that was probably like a ball. They would tell them Jesus is, you know, he was all these horrible, evil things, son of a bastard or whatever, all these phrases. But besides that, like there was none like, you know, we did huge orgy slaughtering thousands of children or things like that. If you were really trying to, if it was just like you wanted to get out of this jail and just confess or whatever. So that was another thing that kind of grouped like, okay, so these confessions were probably relatively accurate. And then also the usury banking thing, like how do you write that off? If these are truly a good Christian group of men that just want to protect the Holy Land, just want to protect Christians, how can you justify that? And then lastly, the big one was, I always thought King Philip, he was the evil guy of France because he was broke. He needed money. The Templars had money and that's why he did it. And this also is incorrect because first the Templars paid taxes. They were his largest paying tax base. If you are broke and you have no money, would you knock out your greatest group unless they're causing so much of an issue that you have no other option? And Philip, he was called like Philip the Fair. I mean, he was like a loved king. And so all these things put together helped me understand that these Templars, they were really doing this Gnostic, like orgy Canaanite stuff. They worked with the assassins who would murder their own people. They would murder assassins, but the top guys, they had the same like three levels or five levels as the assassins did, who was supposed to be their arch nemesis. So the Templars, I'm sure just like Freemasonry, 90% of the people were honest, hardworking Christians that just wanted to protect, but those people at the top were evil people, the same people at the top now, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's as we learned from your episodes, you know, you start getting into the Templars, likely having come over here to the New World, as we'll call it for now, which of course Christopher Columbus hasn't said. I think it might have been the first episode I did with Adam on Into the Apocalypse, where I was just saying, you know, the Christopher Columbus thing, it just doesn't sit well with me, and it hasn't for a long time. But I wasn't as dialed in as I am now, and as you were on there. But something that goes kind of way back in my own personal history of thinking that was learning about Vikings when I was like 18, 19, and learning about Eric the Red, and then Leif Erikson and the Greenland expedition, and then coming over here, as it seems, to like Newfoundland.
Oh, yes.
And at that time, which was a long time ago, we'll say like 20 years ago or so, I got on a dial-up modem and was trying to research some of that stuff. And I've read all about these excavations that had gone on in the 70s from a husband and wife team in far north Newfoundland, where they were believing and had believed during their whole time of this, that this was a Viking settlement. A very small Viking settlement, but they had slag that it looked like they were doing metal working. They found the foundations of houses that would have been built, or buildings that would have been built, that seemed to match Scandinavian architecture and things like that. But all of that, you couldn't read five words without saying that it's a hoax. that this was just a hoax. But yeah. I was like, I don't know. I think maybe these people are onto something.
Well, you know, everyone loves writing making Viking ruins in their spare time as a good trick. I do it every Saturday. So
we've got that all over the United States. There have been Viking ruins found, and all of them, I don't know about today, but last time I looked into them, you couldn't find any that didn't start with the word hoax. You know,
interesting.
It's anything that had to do with Vikings in North America in the past was a hoax. And the more I thought about that way back then, and I was not nearly as open to this kind of stuff. Yeah. It was just fascinating to me. I just thought, oh man, historians got it wrong. They gave all the credit to this great Christopher Columbus when he sailed the ocean blue in 1492. Well, I think that other people had just independently, and that there was no, I didn't see, you know, I thought maybe they'd done their thing. They never named it. They never did much with it. They just came over and they said, oh, okay, yeah, there's land, but we got to get home. But now we fast forward to 2022. I saw a video from a guy on YouTube, Ancient Architecture, I think is his handle. And he just does like ancient architecture news of things that are being brought into canon for academia. Wow. And this year he had a whole thing about that husband and wife couple and their excavations they did. And that is now in canon as truth, the colleges are going to accept that. I think it's supposed to be like around 1050,
yeah,
that they believe that those were there. And that's just fucking awesome because now it feels like I have some footing. If I'm talking to someone who's leaning too heavily on academia to start just breaking down this idea that there was as much significance. There might be a lot of significance to 1492 in multiple ways, but the significance of that little rhyme that we all learned and we all know so well of sailing the ocean blue. So dude, I think we're in exciting times
and just about I never realized like the Vikings, you know, I knew that they for 300 years they stole Europeans and sold it to the Arabs because they found gold and silver from the Arabs up there, but I didn't realize that they did much more than just rape and pillage. Like they went to the British Isles, but they became the Normans. And the Normans, when I just thought of this, Norman looks just, it's the same letters as Roman, but I don't know what that means, or maybe that's just weird, but they dominated the British Isles, France for 300 years, Norman kings, Sicily. They had a king in Sicily that was a Norman king. They founded Russia, the Normans. And these are all stemming from their Viking descendants. So I don't know what that means, but I found that's not the way I imagined how things broke down in like medieval Europe, but that they conquered and put their and descendants ruled, like I said, West, they ended up ruling Western Europe, Sicily, Italy, all these places. But I just found that fascinating.
So what is the connection between Vikings and Templar Knights?
So the Vikings, they became the Normans, and then in France, there was Norman kings, and these were the same kings that these Norman descendants that would be the first 10 Templars. So okay. Henry Sinclair. So Henry Sinclair, he built the St. Clair family. They were originally a French family. They moved to Scotland just at the same time the Templars moved. It was total. They actually did a caravan. They were waving. It was total by accident. But Henry Sinclair, So that he was a Viking. He was one of the people when they came to Scotland to fight with Robert the Bruce, he took them under. He built Roslyn Chapel, which has corn on it before corn was discovered in the New World. But the Vikings are just like the precursor to the Templars, essentially. That's like how their descendants become Templars.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
And then go ahead, Judd.
Well, with like Sinclair and his possible voyages over here. Like you talk about it in your episodes a bit, that they had the name for him that was the White God.
Yes.
And yeah. I've seen photographs of rocks from the areas where people believe that he was.
Okay.
That supposedly, and I can't verify it with my own eyes, but they're saying there's Templar carvings. There's like Templar crosses and things like that. Carved in you know high north Newfoundland, Canada, that would date back to around that time. Mm-hmm. I look at them myself and I go, okay, you know, if you say so, because yeah. it's so like mild. I mean, you can just barely see in, you know, like it could just be a rock formation kind of a thing. Yeah. Yeah. None of it is like, oh, here's a cross and here's writing and here's, you know, like none of it's laid out in such right. a way that you go, oh shit, a human did that. And, you know, it would make sense that this was this.
But I guess the biggest would be Oak Island. Have you guys ever seen the TV show? I think Treasure on Oak Island.
I've definitely watched some episodes on it.
They're all the same, dude. They're,
yeah, it's always like we're gonna find treasure next episode.
Yeah. Is it still going? Or are they still
it like probably is, dude? They still out? Are like picking so. Up one coin at a time, and that they build the whole episode up to that. But that was postulated that it was built by the after Friday the 13th, 1308 or 1303, they go to three places, the Templars, because they're kicked out of France. They go to Scotland. They help Robert the Bruce. They meet Henry Sinclair there. They go to Portugal. They change their name. The king there in Portugal loves them. I forget. It's like the Order of the Temple or Order of Christ. And the king becomes their Grand Master. And they go to Sicily, which they install a Norman king. And I'm going to butcher his name. I'm just going to Roger de Julie, his son is very jolly. And the flag that they hoist there in Sicily is the skull and crossbones, the Jolly Roger. And that's like another link of Templars and pirates, because pirates take that flag, whether they know it or not, and hoist it, not knowing it's a Templar symbol. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it became a symbol for piracy more than Templar. Yes,
that was good.
But then there's a lot of crossover in there.
Right. No, that was good. And so they, like what the Templars, they hate the Catholic Church, right? They took everything from them. They had all this wealth, all this power. And if unchecked, like if the Catholic Church didn't do this, if you wanted to see what a European monopoly would look like, that's where they were. I mean, they were that powerful. They just had so much money. And so they despise the Catholic Church. So maybe people would say like, well, why are Templars pirates? Why are they attacking these ships just for wealth? Well, no, it's because the Catholic Church's biggest supporters were Spain and Portugal. And Spain was the first ones to have so many ships going back and forth from the New World with just billions in gold. And the Templars knew that this was going to hit the Catholic Church by wrecking these ships. So, and you don't need much to inspire people for greed, you know, riches beyond your wildest dreams. But that was why that these pirates focused so hard on Spain and Portugal, because they're still going after the Catholic Church, whether they like understood that or not at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Edwin Drake. So I talked about him, and Edwin Drake, fascinating guy. I knew none of this stuff, but so he's this awesome pirate dude. Like he's the best. Spain had wanted posters. They rang bells when he eventually died, but he gets one of Spain's biggest treasure ships, and he's got all this wealth. And he knows that if he goes back to Europe, across the Atlantic, Spain is going to come get him. So this is the story, Lee. So instead he goes the long way home, and he's the first one to do the circumnavigate the globe. And he goes back through the Pacific, passing like Japan and all that comes up like into the Mediterranean area. I think, oh no, he went to Britain. So just up the Atlantic to Britain, and he avoided the Spanish. And when he returned there, the queen was, she was the, called the Virgin Queen, Queen Elizabeth. She was 37. He was 35 or 34. And there was all these rumors that Edwin Drake and the queen were having an affair, and he was giving her lots of wealth. She, you know, I mean, the bad boy image, right? You know, this like,
yeah, ladies love an outlaw.
Look at this badass. He's robbing people. He's shooting people, you know.
It's sailing all the way around the globe.
Yes. He's the first one to, you know, it's enticing. And so they were definitely, he wrote in his diary how isn't a direct quote, but he respected the hell out of the queen. And I just thought about that. Not that you wouldn't write that in your diary about your wife or something, but for like this very accomplished man in this time to write that I have the utmost respect for her. I just felt like without trying to bang her, you know what I mean? Like that's a weird thing to write. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they supposedly, they were very close, and they supposedly had a child, And this child was given away because it was obviously the queen was the virgin queen. She couldn't have a child to a Bacon. I can't remember his name, but this when Nathan? he takes what's that?
Was it Nathan Bacon?
It might I think, dude, Nicholas or Nate, you're my amazing memory, Chud. Way to go. Way to go. But when the kid turns 18, he gives him this sealed envelope explaining who's his real father and his real father. And this would be Francis Bacon, who would start the Rosicrucians, Freemasonry, one of the most powerful, like occultist ever known. And yeah, I just found that again, tying all these secret societies back to free Templars and that type of stuff.
Sir Francis Bacon is a very curious character as well.
You ever get into that podcast, The Hidden Life is Best?
I know of it. I listened to them being interviewed once.
Is that like a Francis
it's
Bacon?
Like, it's like a 6-part super deep dive into Francis Bacon.
Dude, I'll have to check that. I got the one book, I started reading it, but he was a brilliant guy. I mean, he allegedly wrote some of Shakespeare, if not all of it, which would make sense because Shakespeare has all this hidden symbolism all up in its pages. What else? He started Rosicrucianism. He made up a story that it started in the 1500s when it didn't by a guy they made up, Christian Rosie Crew or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he also, I think, so that's the theory. After these last three books I've read, I'm of the camp now that the Templars, they stem from a Canaanite religion of some sort. Then they get kicked out. They become they create Freemasons and create Rosicrucianism, but Freemasonry is kind of their shield that they want everyone to know about the Freemasons. They're sharing some information there, but they're a relatively harmless group. And the real guys are in the Rosicrucians, which are really the Knights Templar of days and old. And I think the Rosicrucians even say they're the descendants of the Templars. But yeah, I used to always blame Freemasonry, but now I'm like I'm starting to think like, was this just a creation to take heat? Anything bad? You say, no, it's them. It's not us.
Yeah. Rosicrucians are really interesting too. The Francis Bacon tie-in with that is wild, as well as I just want to throw out. I recently heard of Shakespeare. It's a lot of the words that are English words were first documented through Shakespeare, like our oldest usage of a lot of English words, like stem from that Shakespeare writing. And then you tie in Francis Bacon there, and then you start looking into the Rosicrucian stuff, which, you know, I went down that rabbit hole quite a bit a few years ago. There's even a podcast. It's probably not current, but by the Rosicrucians, just the Rosicrucian podcast.
Okay.
And it's just them like, you know, telling you what they believe kind of a thing on a surface level. But like, I highly recommend check out the first maybe two episodes. It's just them talking about ancient symbols and what they believe they mean. And it's like, it's wild shit. And they end those podcasts all end with meditation. They ask you to meditate and picture this symbol. Close your eyes, picture this symbol. Wow. Now we're going to play tones and you're going to think about the symbol of the sun and you're going to take this in for the next 5 minutes. And that's like how they end these. It's just wild shit.
Very interesting.
Yeah. They're a big headquarters. I don't know
in California.
It's in San Jose.
Yeah. And that's where, their headquarters is where that podcast comes from. It's like their official podcast, which is
what is their like core? What are their core tenets?
I think it's primarily that Gnostic belief. Like they're big into Hiram Abiff. They're big into God not being the God in the Bible, not being the real God or the God of the Old Testament,
the Demiurge, and all that.
Yeah, all that stuff. That's like, dude, and that's also fascinating. Like all not the Illuminati. They're like the only group that doesn't get into. They're a political secret society, not a religious secret society. But all of these other ones, the Assassins, the Muslim secret societies, I can't think of their names now, like the Assassins, all these groups, they literally have this same Gnostic belief set. Like basically do as much, do whatever feels good, even if it's so-called, because there is no really good and bad. It's all a line. And eventually if we do enough bad, we can get the real God to return. And that's like essentially their the Rosicrucian kind of belief, as at least what I, from what I understand.
That's pretty much my takeaway.
Okay. I know you've gone super deep on Gnosticism, interviewed a bunch of like high level Gnostic guys, right, Jack?
Yeah, I talked to like a few. I definitely read a lot, but I had like one or two guys on. Yeah.
I remember when I first kind of like noticed it, I was like, wow, this seems really, really interesting, you know? And like, I heard Marty Leeds like starting to call himself like a Gnostic Christian. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of interested in getting back into Christian. So I started looking into it. And then we talked to Marty Leeds and I couldn't really get anything out of him, like to tell me like what the hell it all meant, right, or what it was, you know?
Yeah.
And then recently I heard Howdy Mikowski went on Greg Carl, on THC, on Higher Side Chats.
Oh, nice.
And he has gone like full Gnostic and like kind of even called himself a Cathar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then like, he's real big into the what's it called? The trap of the reincarnation trap or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, got it. Yeah.
And which I don't really buy into at all. No. But he also, it was kind of a weird thing because I had a great interview with that guy and I love talking to him.
Yeah, I read his book, dude. He's amazing. Yeah. It was one of my favorite books.
He's the one that made Tartaria like accessible to my brain, even though he didn't even like use it. You know, he just, I heard him talk about the World's Fair. Yeah. But yeah, yes. If you are a subscribing member to Higher Side Chats, listen to his show, because in the second hour, like towards the end, he throws out like some crazy QAnon-esque like 5-week timeline of like something terrible happening. And like from the time that he says it, and then like, you know, Greg Carlwood does like the end like recap after it's over, and he releases his show like 3 weeks later and he's like, oh, it's been 3 weeks, I haven't seen anything really like it's gonna, and then, you know, that was 2 months ago or whatever that it came out.
Refers to himself as a Cathar.
Yeah, I don't know if he calls himself a Cathar, but I think he said I'm starting to believe that the Cathars were right. And because they were big into like no sex, not bringing anyone else into the world. Well, they had humanity, right?
Well, they had once like they were like split down the middle. So some of the Cathars, that's what they believed, like we can't even reproduce because we're going to trap more souls in this. And then you had the flip side, like the ones that like the Priory of Sion, all these, they had these huge orgies. They were like the Albigenese crusade that was against the Cathars. And but yeah, some of they were just like the normal Canaanite orgy, drug fields, you know, sex, all that stuff. So, but there was definitely a half, because I remember reading that they took that view, and then the other was like, no, we gotta keep going.
I think he's of the we need to stop it. Okay. But I could be all wrong. I might have interpreted it the wrong way. So
no, I got to listen to that. You've piqued my interest there.
Yeah, it's good. And he gives us some red meat and talks about you know, what's it called, the World's Fairs, which we all want to hear him talk about. So it was cool.
Well, I learned from him. So just
it's
to
like, it's that, like going to see a band and you just want him to do the greatest hits.
Yeah.
Freebird, come on, World's Fair. Yeah. Talk about the World's Fairs.
That's hilarious.
Dude. He's like, well, I just did. Do it again.
He brought up though in his book, and I've never like fact checked this, but for the Columbia World's Fair, a Viking ship was sailed over, a replica they made from Scandinavia, and sailed to America and put on display at the fair. And so I have no reason to doubt that, but I found, so that shit alone, I remember when I read that in his book, I was like, well, that Columbus story is a goddamn lie, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, but were there sea monsters,
dude,
that they were contending with that they did not contend with later?
I was like, you're so nice for listening to my show, Chuck. But I was on my show, I joked that because that was the big fear. So they, prior to Chris Columbus, there was plenty of explorers that wanted to go west, but no, they couldn't field crews of them. The power people, elite, and all these people, the urban legend was that the Atlantic Ocean had so many sea monsters. And that's why all the maps have those drawings of the funny looking animals. And the more I think about that though, I feel like that there has to be more to this, because these people are, yeah, we think of them as stupid, but you guys, they're brilliant. They're probably smarter than we are today in most areas. And so why would they, you know, totally just believe in monsters if they didn't have some sort of evidence that was true? At least that's my take from that. But I don't know if that's
The story on why Italy, his motherland, wouldn't give him the money, and why did he have to go to Spain to get the funding to go?
He's Genoese, and Genoese, I guess they didn't really like, he didn't speak any Italian. So They call him Italian, but he didn't. And I'm pretty sure he had zero ties to Italy, but he goes to Spain. So because they think that this is because he's supposedly a Templar. So he goes to Spain to get the funding. And because that's the Catholic Church's. So it's like a slap in the face type of thing. But I don't even know. And he wasn't even successful when he went to Spain. He had to wait like 5 more years to get the funding. And the funding never comes from Spain, really. It comes from these Jewish bankers, who are these Genoese bankers. They were the ones that gave him the funding to go explore America.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. But some like weird things about him that I love. That was my favorite part of the show. So I just want to pull up the confusion with that. But so in 1492 in Spain, do you know what happened I bet you guys do, but do you know what happened in 1492 in Spain, Adam?
Spanish Inquisition.
Well, they expelled a group of people. So I don't know if you knew that in 1492.
Deborah had to leave.
Yes. Yes. So So in 1492, they removed all Jewish people from Spain.
Because of like usury and all that stuff?
Yes.
So they're kicked out because of usury, but the Templar Knights, who were supposedly Christian, were allowed to participate in it.
No, so the Templars now are in 1492, they're kind of gone.
Yeah, like, they're gone.
They'll still
in the past they had been considered, you know, Knights Templar. They're supposed to be monks, right?
But now they've gone underground, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah.
So is there any thought that's where they popped up as?
What do you mean? Oh, like as the people in Spain that were kicked out?
Yeah. Or so just those people in general?
So I don't think so, but what's interesting is like all these, so like the Templars, these like Kabbalistic banking type of people, and even the Muslims, they all work together because they didn't agree exactly, but they all had similar goals. So since the Jews were kicked out of Spain and kicked out of a lot of countries in Europe, every like Yom Kippur, they would pray for the promised land to be given back to them. They tried to buy it from the Muslims. They tried all these things. And eventually they realized that the best way was that if they found a new land that they could call their own and create their promised land. And so that's why they funded Columbus. And the Templars also had a similar goal. Their dream was to own this Acadia and their dream perfect world. So these two were allies in this finding of the new world. So I don't think they're one in the same. Like Columbus was most definitely a Templar. Most likely Jewish, but they're not like they're mutually exclusive, not mutually. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Well, something you threw out in your episode with that was where he got his crew with the Jews being expelled from there. It's like, would that be why? Cause the idea that any government at that time would be funding an exploration, just to go explore, just to go check it out, you exactly. know, like while we're in the middle, while we're constantly warring, while we constantly have all these things going on, that they would like put all of this into that. Well, maybe this would be more feasible if he was like, look, I'm taking all these people who are being ostracized and kicked out. I have a crew. I only need a ship. I don't need people. I own, you know, or even these people have a lot of the equipment. So it's, you know, it brings the cost way down. So it starts becoming something more, you know, feasible that they would be willing to put money towards it. But then also if you throw on top of that he's going, hey, look, I got the maps, or whoever is, they've got maps. It's not exploration. It's just, we're going to go over, we're going to start bringing stuff back so that we can go find a bunch of idiot tribes that don't have anything. and Spain will be plenty wealthy, you know?
I like that, dude. Yeah, I think there's a lot of evidence that a lot of his crew was probably the Jewish people that were kicked out. If they have nowhere, I mean, where are you going to go? And you have to leave. Maybe you're poor or broke. So you join this guy that seems awfully confident of himself. And what's your alternative? You have none.
Right. Yeah. It is your alternative.
It's true. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the, but so, oh yeah. So also to prove that the Columbus story doesn't make sense. He didn't bring a priest on his maiden voyage or any of his voyages. Every single ship had a priest on. So if he was this good Catholic, Spain, Italian, why didn't he bring a priest on any of his three ships? And then his three ships, their names are like very interesting as well, because so you have the Pinta, Santa Maria, the Nina. I just want to pull up. So Santa Maria is, that's his largest ship. All right, here, I got it. So the thinking is, you know, Santa Maria, so
that's Saint Mary,
Virgin Mary, but in like the Templar Gnostic belief, their woman of choice is Mary Magdalene, because he carried the seed of Jesus's offspring. And the third ship, the Nina, it was originally called the Santa Clara. What does Santa Clara sound like? It sounds like the Saint Clair family. That was the Templar.
Oh, the Sinclairs.
Yeah, exactly. And the Santa Clara could have also been, or the Nina. Yeah, the Nina could have been none other than the Sarah, who was the mythical daughter of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. So this whole thing was like, it kind of reminded me of 9/11 as being like an occult ritual. Because so say, you know, this, you're a secret society, you have all this wealth, you know, this land exists, but you need to now bring it into the consciousness, and need to let everyone accept it. And so it seems it's like right up their alley to do like an occult ritual, like impregnating the new land with Christopher Columbus's, I don't know. I'm sure you've looked into that. Like 9/11 was a ritual thing.
Yeah.
And I thought for the moon landing. Like that.
What's the name of that book that was real popular in the 70s? Blood, something blood.
Yeah. I've read Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Yeah. But that's pretty much a Gnostic view of what happened, right?
Well, so Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and it's not definitely, he does a prediction that this one guy is going to become king of France again, who is a descendant of the Merovingians, who are descendants of Jesus. But they talk about the Priory of Sion there, and just the secret society. Yeah,
it's pretty much what Dan Brown just ripped
exactly.
it off, right?
Exactly. Yes, and that's another interest. But yeah, so that's what that's their belief, is this one of their beliefs, this descendant, blah blah blah. Yeah.
What do you think of the idea of like the Templars were making it over here prior to 1492, and that they, so like I've heard this idea, you mentioned Oak Island earlier, that they were coming over and burying treasure, maybe even things that they took from Jerusalem, like really, really, really important things in Oak Island, or not necessarily Oak Island. Yeah. But somewhere over here, with this really, really slow burn, long plan to start this country, that would be their funding. You know, that they would get the riches. Ooh. Over here. Then we would have this occult ritual to open up the passage. Now we're going over there, and we're going to start the ideal Mason or Templar country. Their state that could be what they want. And then that was funded by these riches that they had stole, brought over here, buried them. We had funding to begin over here. And that's what leads up to, I mean, you know, you just look at the dollar bill, you know, we have some kind of Masonic connection like here. And yeah. I don't know. I heard that a long time ago, and it was just like, oh, I could see that. I could see that.
Are you talking about just gold or like religious relics?
At least gold, but maybe also religious relics. It's the religious relics like wouldn't necessarily be like a major component to it, unless there's more of an occult aspect to like literally all of this that we're still right now. You know, like maybe we are, you know, a part of some massive occult ritual that's been going on for about 1,000 years,
dude. And this kind of does. So, but just the riches and stuff like that made me think of this. So Columbus, he went to the New World four times, but the first he knew he wasn't going to India. And the way how you can accept that he knew, when if he's really trying to find an alternate trade route to India, you're loading that shit up with gold, European goods, whatever you're making, hats, I don't know, things that Europeans were making that were valuable in the East. What did he bring with him on his ship? He brought colorful hats, glass beads, and metal balls and other little trinkets. So who are you planning on trading in India that with to get spices and silk? Unless you know that you're not going to India, you're going to a land with barbarous people. I'm just like, you know, sure, less technologically advanced people, that savages, this would blow their minds. And you'd be able to trade this stuff to them for worthless, very pretty much worthless to you. And in return, possibly get some real good stuff. So I just found that fat, like that makes, you know, if you're going to trade with China or India, you're going to bring things to buy the goods. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to sail there with stuff that their peasants can make.
Yeah. So if you came here to trade with it, there's no gold-based monetary system that would have been
well, they just didn't have the tech like to do any of this. And the reason they knew that was because, or Christopher Columbus knew this, is because the girl he marries, her family comes from a Templar pirate family in Portugal, and they have these maps from St. Clair and the Zeno brothers, who were two guys that sailed with St. Clair in the 1300s that came to the New World at Oak Island, blah, blah, blah. All these maps get passed down to this girl's family, who by chance marries Chris Columbus. And they just knew that the people there were, again, like just like kind of back, you know, back country. They didn't have any of the technology.
Simple.
Yes, that's good. Simple. Yes. Very good. Yeah. So that's why he brought that stuff, because he knew that was all that was going to be needed to like blow their minds. You know?
Yeah.
Look at this hat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, it goes on your head. Holy shit.
Yeah. It's funny to think too, like Astoria, Oregon was the first city settled in. It's an hour from me on the coast, you know, it's okay. The first city settled in the West. And it was settled by Jacob Astor as a trapping, where they trap beavers to make hats to send back to Europe.
Funny, dude.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. But yeah, dude, and that's something that also was so fascinating to me. It's like, I love like thinking about it, which may sound weird, but all of these like diaries and stuff that, like how we talked about hoaxes, there's all these diaries of people that they write about their travels to a new land filled with riches. Everyone says, oh, it's a hoax or it's a copy or whatever. But all of them talk about like this one guy sailed to Newfoundland in before Columbus, like by 5 years. And he called it the land of cod. And codfish weren't known in Europe at this time. And So cod, the word cod also means that someone sailed there earlier because they both had the same name. But what he said when he sailed there, he had trouble like parking his boat because there were so many codfish in the ocean that it was hindering his maneuvering of the ship. And I've read other things like how the rivers were, you could just stick your hand in and grab a fish. Resources were so plentiful that it was probably such a drastic change from Europe, where they've kind of polluted their country. They're, you know, kind of using up the resources, and you come to this land that has seemingly unlimited resources. But
it starts sounding a lot like Garden of Eden.
Dude, that's a very good point.
I make, as soon as I start hearing those descriptions of what they believe that it looked like here, you know, at this time or before that time, even, it's just like, huh, maybe this was the Garden of Eden, you know?
Interesting. The Mormons think so.
Oh, that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
They think it's in Missouri, I think.
Yeah,
I've never been to Missouri though, so I can't say if it's Garden Eden-esque.
Yeah, Tony Arbor
like Columbus. He just, none of that stuff, and also he's supposedly a humble merchant, came from like a lower class family. That doesn't work because classism was very strong in the 1500s. You're not going to be able to marry a noble born girl if you're a descendant of a peasant. How did he get educated? The peasants didn't go to college. Peasants didn't go to school. So their stories, like a thing that they, what I ended to prove that or help prove that he possibly was Jewish, was in Genoa, there had a big textile industry, and the textile industry was predominantly Jewish ran. And they, his dad was ran a cloth factory or whatever, a textile factory. So is he the only exceptions in Genoa that he was a Christian, or is it that he's just also Jewish because everybody else on Genoa in the textile industry was?
Yeah, that's crazy. And then if you can, like, there's a big, big crime family called the Genovese crime family. I don't know if I'm like reaching for connections, but Corey
Hughes. That's okay. Hughes, reach.
Corey Hughes. Yeah, that's what we're about here. Corey Hughes is like a great researcher who gets into the no-no topics a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, he pretty much says that the mafia is all Jewish run. So, man.
Interesting.
If that's like the Jewish textile industry area of Italy, and then the mafia, there's a crime family from there, and
yeah,
wild.
Yeah. Dude, that's a good, I think that's not too far of a, you know, reach.
His JFK stuff is the best I've ever heard.
I knew his name, and I just couldn't think of, so yeah, I remember like he does a lot, he's done shows with about JFK, I'm sure, all over.
Yeah, he has like a 7-hour presentation on it. He was just on our friend Ghost's My Third Eye podcast, and our friend Ryan Dean was on it with him, and they did like a real good 2-hour presentation. It's up on damn, you know, wherever you can get that podcast. Yeah, so check it out. I'd like to do a show with him about the formation of the ADL, but I've still gotta really decide if that's somewhere I want to go. So
you like your podcast?
Yeah. I like my wife being able to do business in Portland, Oregon, you know. Yes. So like
and the last big thing, like I mean, we keep going, but the last like big thing was that the mafia, the cartel, whoever, our government uses these illegal groups to commit crimes against whoever they're going, whether it's us, whether it's another government, whatever. And that's the exact same thing that these Templar pirates were. So for the Britain, for France, they would split the whatever they got with the crown. The crown would disavow them if they were caught, and they used them just as enemy combatants in, like, you know, guerrilla warfare. And I always find it amazing that you see the same tactics even in the 1600s that are still used today. You know, funding a rogue group that you kind of control is a move that we have done, America has done.
It's just Palestine. It's just Iran-Contra.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's the only time they tried it.
Before we get you out of here, Jack, what I found like really, really interesting, I didn't get through all 3 years, I only listed 3/4 of the first one, but you talked about like the Knights of Malta, and what do you think the presence is still to this day in, you know, everyday America?
That's a great question. I think that it's like, again, that it's like that 90% have no idea. So there's these, the Knights of Malta, all, I don't think they're very as powerful as they were, but these same, they don't care about changing the name. They've changed their secret society names hundreds, if not thousands of times. So whatever they call themselves, I still believe that these people with these beliefs that they're trying to create this like Gnostic revolution or the one world government type of thing, make everybody be animalistic, just do what feels good. That's still the goal. And it's just ran by now it's ran by the CFR or top guys in the CFR and less by occultic secret society groups. So I think like the Templar Knights, I don't think they still exist in that name, but these beliefs have lived on, changed hands many times.
Secret societies are becoming NGOs.
Yes, dude. And I honestly believe that, dude. I think that's true, because there is, you know,
I think that's certainly true. I mean, I think a lot of the NGO stuff that we see at this point in time is, I think it's just, it's been transferred from being secret societies to being something that it just needs to fit our modern times better.
Yeah. Agreed, dude. I totally agree. Yeah.
That's cool.
That's interesting. It's, a lot of parallels to be drawn, and I like doing this secret society stuff. I haven't done it in a long time. This is a good one. Jack, if anybody wants to look into this further and wants to listen to your show, where can they find you?
Yeah. If you want You can listen to, I did three shows on it, Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence, all podcast and YouTube platforms. But if you really wanted to go deeper than I did, which you can, the book, this book, Dawn of Piracy, it's old. It was referenced in the Secret Societies and Subversive Movements book, which was written in like the 1920s. So I don't know how old the book is, but it's an awesome, it's just great. So if you love pirates, you want to see more about how Templars are connected and how this all ties into today, that it's called Dawn of Piracy, The Building of New Jerusalem. And that's the name of the book. But yeah, and you can find me on Twitter at Kojak Podcast. And that's my handle everywhere. So you can find me that way.
That's great. Ooh. Oh, Adam, you're muted.
I said tremendous. Wow. Chud, final thoughts.
1492 is not what we were told.
Did you guys
maybe that was my first thought.
Did you guys ever think of if you fake and gay, what it would be if you just used the first letters to spell it out?
Oh, no shit. Dude, wow.
That's a great part to end on. Holy hell.
Wow. Yeah. How can I have never noticed that?
Yeah, I noticed it when Jack talked about how his wife wears her spaces fake and gay sci-fi.
Wow, that's
so funny. I want to meet your wife someday. She sounds awesome. You said she starts getting into conspiracies and goes straight to 4chan. She wears a space of fake and gay shirt all around. Yeah. So yeah.
Sounds like you got a great woman there.
We'll do
looks like she has a powerful legs as well.
Yeah, we should have a dinner party show. We'll have dinner and have dinner conversation.
Cool. Right on, Jack. This has been a lot of fun, and I gotta look into it more. It's a lot of names, a lot of information, but yeah, you did the work for us. So we really appreciate it and appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
And you're welcome back anytime you like. And we'll keep checking you out because it's always a good time.
Too nice, guys. Thanks so much. Take care, everybody.
All right. See y'all.
Peace out.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.